Senate will come to order. Senator Ross, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor for a moment?
You may, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Members of the Senate, I wish to apprise you of what's going on in reference to Joint Rule 22 and how this will transpire today. There have been some proposed amendments to the Joint Rule here. We have incorporated those into a new corrected copy that will come out later. The House, as it appears, is in concert with those amendments. However, the House appears to want to have some additional amendments that they may wish to bring. So what's going to happen here today is the corrected copy joint rule is going to be presented to the House of Representatives. If they vote and approve that joint rule, then we will take up the vote later on today on the joint rule. If the House does not approve the Joint Rule 22, then we will get notice of that, and I will be submitting to you a Senate rule for us to consider. There are some difference. There's a potential difference, a major difference, between what I believe the House may or may not adopt versus my sense from the floor with regard to what we believe would be appropriate with regard to the Senate rule. So depending on what occurs in the House, we'll get word of that, and we will break later on to deal with the joint rule. But that gives you a heads up as to how this may or may not flow. In the interim, we will go back in, and I will make the motion in just a second, go back into Committee of the Whole. We'll work Committee of the Whole for a while, and then later on, we must have a vote one way or another on our rules today. So that's basically how it'll happen. If there are any questions, please see me or the President, and we'll let you know. Is everybody clear on that process? With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole for consideration of bills on general file.
You heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senator Driscoll, would you like to return to the chair, please?
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 15-0015. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 15, Court Jurisdiction and Act Relating to Court Jurisdiction, sponsored by the Joint Judiciary Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it is with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 15, Mr. Chairman, there is, I believe, one amendment, and I will explain the bill and the amendment. If we can go ahead and have the amendment read at this time.
Senate File 15, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 8.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd go ahead and at this time move amendment Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 15. Leave, I will go ahead and explain the amendment and the bill together. What we've got in this particular case in Senate File 15 is a part of what's become known in the Wyoming Supreme Court as the Rule 1 Initiative. Rule 1 of the Wyoming Rules of Civil Procedure provide, or the intent of that, is that when we look at litigation, is that it be both the quick and inexpensive administration of justice. And as anybody who has any involvement, either pleasurable or unpleasurable, in our judicial system knows, that it's anything but quick and anything but inexpensive. And so, as a part of that, we've been working with the Supreme Court to find ways to see if we can streamline both the administration of justice in the civil justice system, as well as help with the help keep it more inexpensive. And that's what is the impetus behind Senate File 15, as we've been working with the Supreme Court in some ways to do that. What we're doing in Senate File 15, initially as it came out, is that we are doing two things. First of all, as you look at the bottom of page 1 on Senate File 15, it was to increase both the amount of jurisdiction in small claims court in the circuit courts from 5,000, its current level, to 7,500. The amendment in this case would delete that change, and I'll explain why in just a minute. But that's what the amendment does. It would delete out and leave the small claims jurisdiction right where it is for right now. The remainder of the bill then takes the overall jurisdiction in the circuit court and extends it from the current level of $7,000 to a level of $50,000, so that any civil case where the amount in controversy is $50,000 or less would be heard, or under $50,000 would be heard then in our circuit courts instead of our district courts. Why would we want to do that, and how would that help in the Rural One initiative? There's two handouts out there. There's two handouts that I've had extended out today. One of them is in the a bar graph in color, shows the district court filings. The purpose behind this is to move some of the workload from our district courts, where we find things to be the most sluggish, to our circuit courts, where things are happening on a more rapid fire and more inexpensively. So what you have there is, you see over the last several years, approximately the last 11 years, the increases in civil cases and domestic relations cases in our district courts. In this case, what we're doing is trying to move a significant number of civil cases from the district court down to the circuit court. What effect that would have is, on the other handout, which is a graph where you see some papers and things on a county-by-county basis based upon the workload and the statistics derived from the clerks of the court, or on a county-county basis, the different types of cases and what's anticipated that if this bill passes, the effect that would have. And what you're seeing is ultimately about statewide, about some 5,000 or so cases would be transferred from the district court down to the circuit court. The purpose of that and how that works, the circuit courts are have a lot higher throughput. The rules of discovery and the rules of procedure are abbreviated and much more succinct in the circuit courts. Discovery is much more limited, and by doing that, limiting the amount of discovery that's available in the circuit courts, it helps cut down on the cost of litigation and helps get those matters resolved very quickly. In moving that, most of what we found in talking with the clerks of the district courts is that there's a significant amount of clerk work. Many of these cases will be cases that are by collection agencies and others. So a lot of times there's not a lot of judge time involved, and certainly a lot of clerk time involved. But nevertheless, it will help lighten the load at the district court level. There may be a little bit of displacement here and there. There's also a little bit of change in cost. The circuit courts are funded through the Supreme Court and are completely paid for by the state. The district courts are funded through the counties. And so what you're talking about as far as money-wise is that you will be moving money from the filing fees in the district court will now be being paid to the circuit court. So we're different pockets in government, but nevertheless, it will affect counties to some degree. About the largest extent, we think, is about in the neighborhood of about $2,500 or so. I think ran from about $1,500 to $2,500, maybe even $5,000 in some of the larger counties. But we're not talking about a lot of money that switches. It'll also alleviate some of the workload for the clerks of the district court. In doing that, that's the purpose behind that, is to help the courts manage their docket a little bit better, and also, like we were talking about before, it helps. I think it will also help people find their cases resolved a little bit more quickly. It'll relieve some of the workload on district courts who who are responsible for divorces, are responsible for all felony charges, who are responsible for all domestic relations cases, all the juvenile cases that require multiple disciplinary groups that go through, the working groups that go through with those, they're in charge of all those things. We can get some of this workload down to the circuit courts. Those judges and those courts are ready and willing to take it on, and so I think it will help in that regard. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask, I stand for questions. If we can go back to the amendment, I'll stand for questions on the amendment. The purpose of the amendment, why we're taking that out, is we don't want to squeeze them in both directions. If we're moving all the cases from $50,000 and below that down to the district court, but we're also increasing the small claims court in, we're going to pinch these guys on both ends. These cases can be the small claims courts can be very time consuming and very difficult for the judges. They take a significant amount of time. So we thought that what we'd do is if we just raise the jurisdiction now, see how that works, and if it becomes appropriate to raise the small claims cases at a later date, we can look at that. But we'll see if we can get the dust settled on the first one first before we go any further. So with that, if we get back to the amendment, I'll stand for questions on the amendment, and then we can talk about
it. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on the amendment, and I've talked to several of my judges about the small claims courts, and they were really concerned about it going from 5 to 7,500, and I think this is a good first step. The question I have is, what they're telling me is that the intention of a small claims court is to just do that, deal with small claims, where you can deal with it, where you don't have to necessarily have an attorney. But the higher you raise that bar, the more apt you are to hire an attorney, which means it gets more complicated, which means that it really is getting away from the function of what a small claims court was intended to do. So the question is, and I certainly am going to support this amendment, should we go the other direction and maybe go from 5 to 3, or is that a bad idea, and is it something we should let this settle at this point for a while and see how it works out?
Those are good points, and indeed, one of the reasons we have this amendment is because we had a number of circuit court judges that came to hearing and requested that for the very reasons that the good senator from Fremont County had just explained. So they were asking for that. They did not ask us to lower it. They just asked us not to raise it. So I guess we could surprise them for Christmas and give them something they haven't asked for, but ultimately they didn't ask for us to reduce it. So.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think we better think twice about this amendment. It seems to me that the fundamental problem we've got in our civil justice system is that the costs have gotten too high for both the plaintiff and the defendant, because it costs so much to go hire attorneys and go through all that legal process. And the small claims court has provided an avenue where the ordinary citizen, with disputes that are not of outrageous size, can get some justice where there may be some justice done because it doesn't cost so much to get it. And I really think that raising it is probably a good idea because it means there's a little wider range of disputes where it is possible to get justice. Because you get into a dispute that's $6,000 or so, it doesn't take too much in the way of attorneys to start eating into that to the point where you don't get justice done. And yeah, I suppose the judges look at it as chicken feed and don't like it. But it is a chance for the judicial system to actually do something to help the ordinary citizen. And I think that it's raising the jurisdiction of the small claims court is one where we will actually wind up helping the people. So I think this amendment may be a mistake.
Senator Rosses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to concur with my good colleague from Natrona County. I believe that It's been so long since that limit has statutorily changed that we've created a no man's land where there's a certain value of grievance that is no longer a reasonable thing to pursue because there's no way to afford to get a lawyer to pursue the suit until you reach a certain threshold. So if you had a $2,000 judgment you were seeking or a $3,000 judgment you were seeking, at this point in time, you would need to get a lawyer. The lawyer would end up charging you fees that were comparable to the judgment you were seeking, and it would put you in a very difficult state. So one of the best things I saw about this particular bill was, in fact, that raising of the ceiling. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the amendment, let me go back and just as a way of history for some of the new members. But the last time we changed circuit court jurisdictions, it was my bill, and it was a couple years ago. And at that time, the small claims was at 3,500, and my proposed bill took small claims to 5 and proposed to take civil jurisdiction to 10. There was a lot of pushback at that time, particularly from the clerks, about, you know, what is it going to do to filing fees and who's going, you know, who loss of revenue to the district courts and the counties. Ultimately, we settled on a $5,000 figure. And that's the current state of the law, and the upwards ends of the jurisdiction was remained the same at $7,000. Now, having chaired the interim committee with regard to judiciary, we had initially intended that we were going to move up the small claims jurisdiction to 7, but I also attended the Senate Judiciary's meeting when there was testimony from the circuit courts and so forth. And what I would tell you is that they felt, you know, that they were going to, by increasing jurisdiction up to $50,000, and then if you increase small claims, you're going to squeeze them at both ends, and that ultimately they felt like that would be something that they really needed better facts and figures on, and would come back in the next probably legislative cycle with regard to what the effect of raising the small claims up would be. So I believe at this point in time it is good to stay where we're at. The most important thing will be, and I'll speak later on with regards to the $50,000 limit, but the object would be that, you know, the circuit court, their judicial conference is in support of taking on more responsibilities, but in the end, on second thought, they felt that perhaps they were going to be squeezed a little bit too much on the other end with regards to small claims until we got better study of what the effect of that would be. So I'd urge your favorable consideration of this amendment.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, to speak in favor of the amendment and support my good senators to the east and the west of me here, just for some clarification on this issue, we did list this and had the clerk list this as an interim study topic on this very issue to gain more information. I, like my senator to the west of me here, did talk to our judges, and they are in favor of this current amendment to move it back to 5,000, but we did list it as an interim study topic to gain more information to address these issues. I do rise in support of the amendment.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment. Let's keep in mind the fact that we are increasing, with this amendment on, we already are increasing the workload for the circuit courts, and they asked to kind of just ease it in. And just a little factoid, I mentioned this in committee, it hasn't been that long since the amount of the small claims was raised, and about 12 years ago I brought a bill to raise it from 2,000 to 4,000. I was still in the House, and it got through to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and a member of that Senate Judiciary Committee made an amendment to move it from 4,000 down to 3,000, and as punishment for crossing me, he is now the Attorney General of the state of Wyoming. So just shows you, you know, cross me and get rewarded for it. But, Mr. Chairman, in addition to the comments of the last speaker, last person who spoke, the Circuit Court judges also pointed out that there are some interior contradictions in the current statute language regarding small claims. That's one of the reasons we suggested we bring it for interim study, is to study not only the limit but also the statutory language itself to get the whole thing cleaned up and then probably bring it and raise the ceiling. But right now we want to ease the workload in by raising the jurisdictional limit up to 50,000. Once they're used to that, then we can kick in the higher small claims level.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be rising in support of the amendment. There's a certain appeal or an accessibility, I think, to that small claims level when it's 5,000 and below. It's the kind of a court where people can show up after work on their lunch hour or arrange their schedule and take care of it. We get into these higher numbers, and while it may serve a broader span of challenges, once you start involving those higher numbers in the one side brings an attorney in, it's no longer, you know, a fairly equal playing field for two different individuals. Then you have, you know, the higher numbers and legal counsel involved and the time thing. This remains, as it is to now, today, a court that's accessible and people are able to resolve their smaller issues. And I think that's the right place.
Question have been called for. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, questions that were there that I thought deserved an answer before we went on, that a couple of points that weren't addressed on some questions that were brought up. First of all, in small claims, it's important to recognize, and some of this has been alluded to a little bit, but what needs to, I think, be said directly, is that there's a different procedure that applies in small claims than applies in circuit court, and there's a different when the circuit court sits as a small claims court, it's a different set of procedures than what sits as an actual court where it has a jury potentially or a judge, and there's different rules that apply there. And then there's a different set of rules that applies at the district court level as well. So. Also, when you look at the circuit courts, they actually have, I think last year, when you look at all the things that come before them, over 100,000 cases that appeared or ran through the district or circuit courts last year, 100,000 cases in a year. And, of course, that's everything from a traffic ticket to a DUI to a minor in possession to a family violence to initial appearance on any other kind of crime. So there's a lot there. The other one, but when we talk about procedure, when you have this procedure, when you have a small claims, you come in, you fill out the paperwork, it's served usually by sheriff or police, it's served, and when you get that small claims, you only have 2 weeks before you have to be in court. And so as you raise that amount, you're saying, okay, let's raise it from 5,000 to 7,500. Okay, that's fine. But if you're the defendant on that side, you have to be in court in 2 weeks. And so if you get served, you're going to be in court within 2 weeks to defend the claim that's now, instead of 5,000, potentially 7,500. So you have to start at some point. It starts to, that abbreviated schedule starts to impact upon really the due process that a person has when their property is at risk. The other thing that happens with that is you get one shot and you show up and you may not have documents. You may have documents. The other side may have documents. You may not have any documents. What actually happens is also it's kind of counterintuitive, but as you raise the threshold level in the small claims court, it's more likely that you have an attorney show up to help a party in small claims court, which is exactly what you don't want to have happen. And so if a party, and what happens now if you show up in small claims court, well, since there's no discovery, no pretrial discovery, it comes in and the person looks over there and there's the good plaintiff with their attorney, or the defendant appears with their attorney, and the plaintiff doesn't have one. He looks over there and goes, "Oh, wait a second, Your Honor, I didn't know he was going to bring a gun to a knife fight." And he says, "Well, do you want to proceed?" The judge will ask him, "Want to proceed, or do you want time to get your own attorney?" And so he says, "Well, gosh, I think I'd like to get my own attorney." So now they have a continuance, and so all of a sudden now, instead of having a quick resolution in 2 weeks, we're set off there. And so then you have to have the tuned attorneys and the judge, and the courts all have to match. And ultimately, we may not have accomplished what we set out intending to do if we actually increase the jurisdiction at this point in time. And so it's a topic that we've written down. want to go back and look as an interim topic and see what we can do to see if there's a way that we can make this so that we can do exactly what you're talking about. But for right now, I would encourage you to vote in favor of the amendment, and we'll come back next year and we'll have a better resolution for you in small claims court. Thank you, Mr.
All of those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 15, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Motion's passed. Senator Schiffer.
On the bill. Question for the proponents of this bill. Was there any discussion in terms of the physical facilities for these courts? As you bring the caseload in, and if you go out and look at the court, the numbers of courtrooms and the hours they're used, can they accommodate, can the circuit court rooms, if you will, chambers. Can those chambers accommodate this increased workload?
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, Chief Justice Kite spoke to us about this and was completely in support of it. It was important, especially as it is their job to help balance that workload and look at it and make sure justice is moving throughout the state. We did have a district court judge take a few minutes to testify to the hearing to the committee. And what he relayed was, right now, if you were to want to bring a case in front of him, if it was a one-day case, you were looking at, I believe, next October. And that's how far out their workload was. And if it was going to be a multiple-day case, it was beyond that. And so what he was just trying to share was their frustrations based on the workload at the district court levels on getting justice to the people as soon as possible. And this idea of looking at workloads and shifting them around, and while everyone recognizes circuit courts are certainly very busy also, it's trying to find that happy medium and a sense of balance that was portrayed to us by Chief Justice Kite. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, a follow-up. What I'm referring to is the physical space to hold a court. In many of our counties, there is one courtroom. The room to hold the court is only one of them. And my question, what I'm getting at, is this really going to solve the problem if you don't have the physical space to have the district court holding, doing their work, and the circuit court doing their work, if physically you can't do it because there's no room? There's not a desk and a chair and a place for the people to sit and for lawyers to stand or do what they do. My question is, can we really accommodate this in a circuit courtroom and in a district courtroom throughout the state? Is it going to truly solve the problem, or are we shuffling chairs?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The testimony that we had not only the Supreme Court testified with regard to this, we had the conference of the judges of the district court was represented, as was the conference of the circuit court judges were represented. And what their representation to us was that they could do this with no additional increase in the number of judges. If we don't have additional judges, I don't believe that we need additional facilities. The other thing that happens in this is most of this work, when you look at what happens in these types of cases, these cases of $50,000 or less, is that most of it is clerk work. Very few of these will go to trial. Most of them are with respect to, there'll be medical bills, or there'll be collection agencies, or the smaller cases. A lot of these end up in default. So the actual number of trials that will increase will be some, but you're not anticipating there'll be a huge or tremendous number of increases in the trials at the circuit court level. That being said, even though having those trials at circuit court level will still be a more efficient use of those space and of that time than it takes in district court because of the additional time, the discovery rules, and the other things the district court judges have to do. But the testimony that we have is that it would not increase the requirement facilities of courtrooms. There may be an adjustment where you may end up dropping here or there. You may end up dropping a deputy clerk of the district court and potentially increasing here or there a clerk of the circuit court, a deputy clerk of the circuit court, but ultimately that should be a fairly small displacement that happens there. There may be one or two around the state was the best estimate that we had. And so my understanding is that there will be no additional requirements or demands on the facilities with respect to the courtrooms and the judges. We may have to find a chair and a little workspace for a clerk here or there, but that's where we're at, and that's the answers that we've got during our testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion made when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 0015, say aye.
Aye.
Nay. Opposed. Senate File Number 0015 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill up for our consideration is Senate File 0020. Clerk will read the bill.
This is the wrong spot. Okay, we're moving.
Senate File 20, Election Code Revisions, an Act Relating to Elections, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 0020 and also known as Senate File 20, there is a standing committee amendment, and I would request that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 20, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 5, line 13.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the standing committee amendment to Senate File 0020, and also known as Senate File 20, and ask the good chairman let me yield to the floor sponsor of this bill, Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is brought by us for the County Clerks Association, and of course involved with that would be the City Clerks and the Secretary of State Elections Office. They do a corrections bill frequently in elections to clean up the problems that they have found in the clerk's offices and the Secretary of State's offices. A lot of it are small things as time goes and as technology gets better. This has 14 items, including 3 repeal provisions and an effective date. I'll run through it quickly, Mr. Chairman, and see if there are questions. If we go to page 2, you'll see that we're getting rid of each write-in candidate nominated or elected at a private primary election. Nobody's elected at a primary election. Everybody's nominated by their party, and then they run and they're elected at the general election. Petition for nomination over on page 3. We have added to the petition, commissioners or other district office. And, of course, we've done that because now commissioners can have 5 districts as well as state senators or representatives. On page 5, we have the amendments. The first amendment we have, as soon as I can find it, We're talking about qualifications and the number of signers for petitions. On page 13, we delete candidates and say the office. It's 2% of the total number of votes cast for the office, not for the candidates in the previous election. And then down on line 14, in that particular district in the last general election, for the legislative district or county commissioners, again with the possibility of having county commissioner districts, that has to be added. And then under line 22 is the big amendment there. If a district's boundaries have changed since the last general election, then the required number of petition signatures shall not be less than 2% of the number of registered voters in the current district boundaries at the close of the day on the day immediately preceding the primary election. Mr. Chairman, we're going to have redistricting. The committee will be working on it all year, and in 2012 we're going to vote on it, and we have an election in 2012. And I imagine some of the districts will change. Over on page 6, we have candidates, and on another part, write-ins. Candidates whose votes did not affect the nomination but wish to have these votes counted shall follow the procedure set out in Wyoming 22-16-106. The write-in counts voted, and if they don't have any, if they're not enough to have anything to do with the election, and they want it, then they should pay for it. Find out who voted for them or how many voted for Mickey Mouse, Santa Claus, and all of the other perennial candidates. Then 22-9-107 is fairly important. If the clerk determines so that the applicant, this is absentee voting, is entitled to vote, he shall mark the application accepted. Not less than 40 days, no more than 45 days prior to the election, distribute to the applicant the ballots. We have a problem here with the federal laws because the federal laws want those absentee ballots to go to those who are voting out of the country. And, of course, what brought this on are the troops that are in the Middle East, and there's a lot of them deployed all over the planet if you ever take a chance to see who we have deployed where. And this is also the expats that are voting, living around the country but keep their home of record in Wyoming, and then they want to vote 45 days if they can get their ballot back in that time from the printer, if they can't, 40. Sometimes it's a small county, small printing job. There's only a few national printers that do these type of ballots, and 5,000 ballots when somebody wants 5 million, the 5,000 kind of sits down in the priorities. But they have to be here 40, but we would prefer 45. Over on page 7, we're talking about ballots shall be removed and stamped with a regular rubber stamp. Well, we don't use a regular rubber stamp, and we don't fold them anymore. So what we're doing on that page is just getting rid of having to use stamped with regular rubber stamps. Technology has arrived. Page 8, again, ballots and stamps shall be delivered under seal. No stamps. Down at the bottom on 8, before delivering a paper ballot to an elector, a judge of election or county clerk shall initial the ballot. Sometimes the county clerks are doing their own absentee balloting in their office. They just don't set up an absentee balloting place like some of the bigger counties do. Then we whip on over to 22-13-107. This was a court case guaranteed to win if we ever saw one. An elector spoiling a paper ballot by mistake or accident may receive another ballot by returning the rejected ballot to a judge of election not more than twice. Try that as a judge and see what happens to you. So for years, the election judges have been told, forget that. They ruin 20 ballots, give them a 21st. Because if you don't do that and you tell them they can't vote, life gets real grim. page 9, 2214-103, ballots not initialed by a judge or election or county clerk, election clerk or county clerk, shall not be counted. That's just adding the county clerk in because they need to be. Let's see. Okay, canvassing board. The county canvassing board is county clerk and two electors of different political parties resident in the counties appointing by the Board of County Commissioners. We're changing that to county clerks because the county commissioners always say 23 times at the end of the election, who do you want? And the county clerk has taken the effort to go out and find a Republican and a Democrat to sit on the canvassing board. And I imagine sometimes that's not too easy. 2216-106, again, each write-in candidate nominated or elected. There's no electing at primaries. You're only nominated at primary elections. Down at the bottom, the chief election officer shall notify a write-in candidate. No, candidate who has been nominated, not candidates who's been nominated. One. Okay, and then over on 11, each notification provided, and then it's write-in candidates that failure to timely respond will result in forfeiture of the nomination. That's in the middle of how they are notified. Again, here's the other one. Any person who requests to have the vote cast for any write-in candidate whose votes did not affect the election, counted by filing a request, together with the administrative fee. We're adding on the administrative fee because if there's 5,000 votes cast and there are 30 write-ins and somebody wants somebody to open the write-ins and count them, they should have to pay. Boy, you're quiet. Page 12 has just changes in vacancies in other offices, temporary appointments. The person appointed shall serve until a successor for the remainder of the unexpired term is elected at the next general election and takes office on the first Monday. Provided, if a vacancy in a four-year term of office occurs in the term's second or subsequent years after the first day for filing, an application for nomination pursuant to 209, no election to fill the vacancy shall be held, and the temporary successor shall be appointed to serve the remainder of the unexpired term. Okay. And we move on over to 13, and we have the long amendment of add-in on notifying a write-in candidate who has been nominated within 48 hours after the canvassing board meets, how they're to be nominated, and that they're supposed to accept within 5 days. And what happens on attempted delivery and when they're unsuccessful. Over on page 14, 308, the vacancy and nomination has been shell, could be may now, may be filled by the municipal clerk, et cetera, governing the body of the municipality. There's a nomination real close to the election. Maybe the city council doesn't want to appoint anybody. Let it just stay vacant until we have the election. So that's why we put the may in at their request instead of the shall. We start on ordinances. Okay, the ordinance proposed may also be submitted to a vote. They can give the ordinance to the city council, but it could also be submitted to the vote of the municipal electors for a primary or general election only, instead of holding special elections any time during the year, and you know you're going to get 15-16%, if you're real lucky, 30%. So if we have those during the two elections where we hope most of the people vote, they will.
Now, the governing body can approve a referendum, but if 10% of the qualified electors registered in the city or town file a petition, I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay, what it says in 2223105 is that if somebody signs a petition and they're not registered to vote, and they run down and register to vote that day, and the petition's turned in a week, even though they weren't registered to vote on the day they signed it, they were registered to vote on the day that the petition was turned in. We had a lot of discussion over that one, but decided to keep it like that. Okay, and the final one is what saying what electioneering is. Electioneering is illegal when voting is being conducted. In other words, in Laramie County, we have an atrium in the, between the historic county building and the new county courthouse. That's where all of the absentee voting is. Somebody will come along and park their vehicle on the street right outside of that with a great huge magnetic sign. That's electioneering during the absentee voting. Mr. Chairman, I thank everybody for their patience as I ran through this, and I stand ready for election and would ask for your approval. Questions?
Are you ready for the question? On the amendment, excuse me. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee of a Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 0020, please say aye. Senator Burns.
Amendment, not a committee of the whole amendment.
I am sorry. Thank you. Stand corrected. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. Are you all those in favor of? We are back on the bill. Senator Von Flatter.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just, for the sponsors of the bill, I'm just a little bit confused on. Is my microphone on? I don't know.
It is.
Okay. I'm a little confused about the where we changed. It was 2% of the last general election for the House, for the representative. So you had to have that many signatures. 2% of all the votes cast in the last U.S. House race. But we've changed it now, and the language is confusing on page 4, line 1 through 4. Where the candidates in that particular district in the last general election for legislative district or other district or for representative in Congress, and then in parentheses, whichever applies according to 225304, which when you look it up, originally just said 2% of the vote. So when you go to the changed language on the next page, page 5, and you go through the new language 13 through 19, does that mean that if you are running for county commissioner or a particular office of that district, you only need 2% of people that voted for that office? Is that how that reads? I think that might be correct, but this is language that we argue about years later, so I hope we can clean it up.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually just put my bill away, so give me 1 second. Mr. Chairman, the previous language, and this has to do with how you get nominated to have your name appear on the ballot as an independent candidate. Current law has that if you're seeking to have such nomination occur, you need to circulate a petition and receive 2% of the number of votes that voted in that county in the last congressional election. So that's your target. The problem is that we're now going to have, we have legislative districts, which you've had for a long time, but that cut hasn't been made, and what they've required is that you do 2% of the votes in the county. But now we also have commissioner districts, so the question is, how do you effectively develop a system to have the right or the independent
candidate get on the general ballot by circulating a petition? What should be the right number? What we're trying to do is to say you need 2% of the folks that voted in that district, not the entire county. And so I think if we track it in, let's just read the whole paragraph. Okay. A petition shall be signed by registered electors resident in the legislative district or other district in which the petitioner shall be a candidate and eligible to vote for him, numbering not less than 2% of the total of numbers of votes. Cast for candidates in that particular office in the last general election for the legislative district or other district for which the petition is filed. All other petitions shall be signed by registered electors resident in the political subdivision in which the petitioner will be a candidate and eligible to vote for him, numbering not less than 2% of the total numbers of votes cast for trying to see how that's finished. Finally, on line 22... Oh, I'm sorry. Votes cast for representative in Congress in the last general election for the political subdivision for which the petition is filed. If a district's boundaries have changed since the last general election, then the required number of petition signatures shall be not less than 2% of the number of registered voters in the current district boundaries at the close of the day immediately preceding the primary election. What that's trying to do is to account for the fact that you might have created this district or the boundaries may have changed. And I actually do think it does work, but you don't. Two iterations on this one. So I'll tell you what, Mr. Chairman, what I suggest is if the good chairman wants to make me more red in the face, he can probably get that done, but we would have a good discussion of this after we pass it and maybe come with a second reading amendment if it's going to clear it up. But I think it does work, actually. Honestly, I do. But we'll talk about it.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question on page 14 under 22-23-308, vacancies and nomination for municipalities. As I understand the way it was presented, that this is to help a city council that may not want to appoint someone because it's too close to the election. But I also, the flip side of this, if someone decides for whatever reason is not running, it could happen, you know, right after the primary. But there's a person that campaigned hard, and they're the second vote getter. Now you're going to take away his right and let the city council decide if, in fact, they may put any name forward and who they may want to put forward, and it could have nothing to do with the person that campaigned during the whole primary election. Is that correct?
I think we should do. My good friend from Fremont County is did. I hear what you said, and then I can go from there. Right now, under current law, a vacancy in nomination is filled. They don't have any choice. The city clerk and the city council fills it. All this putting May in there says is that they don't have to. They can if they want, but they don't have to. As I said, we talked about this. This could be an amendment that somebody could bring on second reading on this, and we can have a debate on whether it should be shall or may. The committee decided to give the city council, as the elected officials of that city, that municipality, we believe in them, and with that may, we believe in that they'll make the right decision.
Senator Case.
With regard to this one, this only applies to primary elections. So the feeling was is that there's always going to be a general election following the primary. So this is a vacancy in nomination. So it's a vacancy from the primary process. The city authorities would have the ability to fill that if they choose, or they could just let the write-in process run its course and have the vote be filled by write-in for that particular city office at the general election. And it actually came about because of there was one municipality in Wyoming where a fellow ran on the primary in a municipal election, and then he decided to vacate his nomination. He resigned and decided to mount a write-in candidate for mayor. This just happened in the last election. The city council said, you know, they were given the option of filling it, but they decided it would just be better, since they were already going to have all this activity to write in for mayor, to just let the write-in process take its course. And I might add, under the municipal election law, that's the only place where you go to the second highest vote getter. That doesn't happen in other election law in Wyoming. It's only under municipality. So this is actually more consistent with the way we do it for other elections to fill a vacancy. So it's only a vacancy in nomination. It's a nonpartisan election, and it says that the city can, in essence, say let's fill it, or let's just let them write it in for the general election. And that's exactly what it does.
You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate file 0020, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is passed. Senate file number 0020 is passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate file 0036. Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor first?
Yes.
Members of the body, before I make the appropriate motion, just a heads up. I know that Appropriations is working hard. They're going to reconvene at 3:30. We have some further work to do with regards to rules, announcements, and reading in of other bills or standing committee reports. And therefore, to accommodate that additional work that we're going to do here today, I would move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passed.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, the Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 5, do pass. Senate File 6, do pass amended. Senate File 7, do pass amended. Senate File 15, do pass amended. Senate File 20, do pass amended. Senator Driscoll, Chairman.
Senator Driscoll, do you have a motion? You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Thank you, Senator Driscoll. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, January 17, 2011, message number 6. Mr. President, this is to inform you that the House has adopted the temporary House and joint rules of the 60th Wyoming State Legislature as the permanent rules of the 61st Wyoming State Legislature with the attached amendments, dispensing with the reading of the detached amendments. Patricia L. Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Thank you. We are now at that order of business for the adoption of rules. Mr. Majority, floor leader.
Mr. President, I renew my motion that the Senate rules and joint rules
previously adopted as the temporary rules of the Senate of the 61st Legislature be adopted as the permanent rules of the Senate of the 61st Legislature.
Thank you. You have heard the motion. For clarification purposes, before voting on the motion to adopt the temporary rules as the permanent rules, the Senate first considers proposed amendments to the temporary rules. Now, earlier today, we adopted Senate Rule Number 1, which was amended Senate Rule 25-3. We then laid back Joint Rule 1, which creates Joint Rule 22. Amendments... And if you will look then at your mail, in your box, you have now, I think, a corrected copy of those rules which are in question, that newly corrected copy. So if you look to your, I think, red folder, as a matter of fact. So earlier today, we adopted SR1, which amended SR25-3. We then laid that back, JR1, which creates then JR22. Amendments to the temporary rules require a majority vote for adoption. So having said that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move Joint Resolution 1, corrected copy, be adopted as the amendment to the rules, and I will discuss the rule at this time. Mr. President.
Yes, go ahead with the discussion, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Members of the Senate, as you recall, there was some question and there were some proposed amendments to the Joint Rule 22. You will find them in this corrected copy. I will call your attention to the First Amendment, which was an issue that was raised by the good senator from Laramie County. You'll find the last sentence in the first paragraph. Upon receipt, a copy of the complaint shall be provided to the member whom the complaint is filed. So we've taken care of making sure that the legislator gets a copy of the complaint right off the bat. With regard to incorporating Mason's rule, I believe it was section 797, paragraph 4, you will find that identical language at Romanet 2 on the first page. An investigation instituted for political purposes and not connected with intended legislation or with any of the matters upon which a House should act is not a proper legislative proceeding, is beyond the authority of the House or legislature. So we have included that in to make sure that that we have incorporated Mason's. The third change is on the last page, paragraph J, and that is to accommodate the proposed amendment from the good senator from KC, where we make reference to the Senate Vice President and the House Speaker Pro Tem. Those two are duly elected constitutional offices and not the majority floor leaders. So we've accommodated all of the proposed changes. The House has adopted the joint rule, and I urge your favorable consideration of this joint rule.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Is there any further discussion? Question being called, seeing that there's no further discussion. The question before you is in regard to Joint Rule 1 to the Senate rules. Would the Chief Clerk please call the roll? Senator Scott, before we call the roll. Yes, as you described.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas, excused. Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, Amendment number JR1 has been adopted. And now I think that we will then go about the business of voting on joint rule number 20.
I think it's the new rule. Do I need to move? Do I need to make a motion?
Mr. Majority Floor Leader. I think after having consulted with the clerk, she suggests that there was a roll call vote and or a voice vote. I'm sorry, then, that would be sufficient. Senator Ross, at this time, would you like to withdraw Senate Rule Amendment Number 2, which would...
That would be...
Have been a Senate rule not necessary in light of the adoption of the joint rule.
Mr. President, I would move that I will withdraw Senate Rule 2 in light of the previous vote on... joint rule 1 to rule 22.
You've heard that motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senator Bebout.
Okay, so, Mr. President, I want to be sure. We've had a roll call on JR1, and then we're going to take a roll call on the joint rules. But as far as the Senate rules, we do not need a roll call on Senate Rule 1 because we did not have a roll call, as I recall, on that particular amendment. And are we going to deal with that later then, is the plan?
I think your recollection is correct. Give me just a moment to consult with our clerk.
Thank you, Mr. President. We're going to get this right here. I move that the Senate adopt as its permanent rules the amended Senate rules and the amended joint rules as the permanent rules for the 61st legislature.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor?
No. Roll call.
Chief Clerk will call roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Amrick.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas excused. Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Platern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 29 ayes, 1 excused.
By your vote, the rules have been adopted.
Mr. President?
Yes, Senator Bebaum.
I'm a little slow today. I want to be sure.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, would you like to address that?
To answer that question, I withdrew the Senate Rule 22 because of the House's action to adopt joint rule. We have passed the joint rule, and therefore I withdrew the Senate rule. So what we have passed, or what we have just passed, is one Senate rule and one joint rule to the temporary rules that are now permanent.
Senator Bebaum.
That one Senate rule has to be by a roll call vote. It could be by simply A's and A's.
By the nod of the head of the clerk, I would suggest that there's no requirement. Seeing no further comments, question in regard to the rules, we will then move on to the next order of business, which has to do with the introduction and reference of bills. Senate File 106, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 106, School Finance Local Resources, an act relating to school finance, sponsored by the School Finance Committee.
Senate File 106 has been referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senate File 107, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 107, Energy Impacted County Roads Program, and Act Relating to County, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
Senate File 107 has been referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senate File 108, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 108, Remote Electronic Terminals Fees 2, and Act Relating to Banks and Banking, sponsored by Senator Burns.
Senate File 108 has been referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 109, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 109, State Parks Temporary Peace Officers, an act relating to peace officers, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
Senate File 109 has been assigned to Committee Number 6, Travel. Senate File 13.
Senate File 13, Change of Political Party Affiliation, an act relating to elections, sponsored by Senator Jennings.
Senate File 13 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 96, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 96, Open Primaries, an act relating to elections, sponsored by Senator Rothfuss.
Senate File 96 has been assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
President, may I have privilege of the floor before I make the appropriate motion?
You may.
Members of the Senate, we have a photographer who will be here the 18th, 19th, and 20th, so the next 3 days. They're in the basement conference room for composite pictures for the 61st legislature. They will be here from 8 to 5:30, so dress appropriately when you wish to have your picture taken, and try to get that done so that we can have we'll have formal composites for this legislature. With that, Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, January 18th, 2011.
Announcements. Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will have a meeting tomorrow night upon adjournment. We're going to take up Senate File 9, Economic Analysis, Senate File 58, Landowners' Rights in Wind Energy Development, Senate File 10, Protection of Livestock Animals, Senate File 55, Subdivision Parameter, Participation in Fencing, if time allows, and Senate File 64, Wyoming Livestock Identification and Traceability, if time allows, Senate File 100, Cruelty to Animals, if time allows. Thank you.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, just an early announcement for Wednesday morning, because this is one of the big recalibration bills that we're going to take up. We will take up Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock in the Hurster Building, room 1699. Senate File 70, Education Accountability. This was the big bill in the interim that the Select Committee on School Finance did. Early announcement about that meeting Wednesday morning.
Senator Meyer.
Appropriations will meet at 3:30 and room 204 to continue the budget.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, Committee Number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow noon, 15 minutes after the noon recess in room 16, and will take up Senate File 47, Concealed Weapons, Senate File 97, Concealed Weapons Retirement Law Enforcement. We will not take up Senate File 99, Sales Tax on Certain Food Items, tomorrow.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will resume its work on Wednesday, January 19th at 7 a.m. in room B63 of the Hersher Building, where we will finish the workup on Senate Joint Resolution 2, Senate Joint Resolution 3, finish the workup and vote on those, and we'll begin hearing on Senate Joint Resolution 5, Defense of Marriage Constitutional Amendment. And time permitting, we can get through those as we'll undertake Senate File 17, Probation and Parole Amendments, and Senate File 67, Guardianship and Wards Sealed Records.
Other announcements, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee Number 9, Minerals, will meet Wednesday the 19th, 15 minutes after the noon recess, to consider Senate Joint Resolution 6, Environmental Protection Agency Regulations.
Other announcements? Senators, we've just completed our first Monday of the session, and it seemed in a bit like a Monday. You've heard the motion. Senate will stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Tomorrow morning, January 18th. Senate stands adjourned.